Accession number 20475, Reel 4.
Roger, Rotsky, Reel 4.
So we were paying our way, but we had the right to get the services to enable us to have our contracts done. In time, my boss corrupted the officers, the SS officers that were giving the permissions. Corruption was easy. He would send me to a shop, which was black market shop, where you could get the best of Polish ham and butter and vodka and at fantastic prices. We would make parcels in the office of, say, 3 kilo of stuff, and then it would get packed very nicely. I would take a taxi with 3 or 4 parcels, and I would go straight to the center of the SS people at Rüstungskommando and bring the parcels from my boss to Captain so-and-so, or to so-and-so, and so-and-so. Ah, Ingebe Schmidt. My firm was called Ingebe Schmidt. So I was always welcome, because every time I came with a parcel from Schmidt. And they enjoyed it, and of course, if he wanted anything, if he wanted twice the allocation of petrol, he would ask and he would get it. And the best joke was, he had an Audi sports car. During the war, where every drop of petrol was needed for the tanks, he had an Audi, 2.5 liter. So, this a colonel in the SS told him, listen, Schmidt, you can have petrol, but you must make your vehicle so that it doesn't look like being an Audi sports car. So he said, yes, I can do that. I cut the back of the car, put a partition, and the rest, it will be like a lorry. There is no lorry, but a lorry. And he said, and then we put a sheet of material on it, and what I carry inside, nobody knows. And that's what he did. And it nearly cost my life, because once I was going from Lvov to Warsaw, and he was going with his wife, and he said to me, why do you go by train? Come with us. I am going to Warsaw. The day was nice, like this. So I said, yes, I can go. And I went in the back of the car. But when the evening came, it was bloody cold there. So I wound myself in there, and I got that piece of cloth down, and I locked myself in, and I was sitting there. He was short of petrol, and he stopped in Lublin, taking petrol. There were some policemen, German policemen, going around. And he asked him, what do you have there? I have my employee. He said, oh, you're smuggling Jews. Got me out of there. I had to take the trousers off. I am all right, so.
Oh. Did you ever get arrested by the Gestapo?
No.
No. Did you have any narrow escapes?
I did have narrow escapes. You can't not have narrow escapes.
Had you been in any actions before the Warsaw Rising?
We had small actions. First of all, a little bit like IRA actions. where you discipline your own people. We got the report that somebody stole somebody else's weapons, raided the whole thing. And, of course, that went straight. We had a jurisdiction. We had lawyers. It went to court. And eventually, they were adjudicated that they, whoever did it in a treasonable way. Because not only they pinched the weapons from a store, but then they were selling it on the market. So there was a, what you call it, he was to be shot. And my boss in the underground army was given the job and the order, so took two of us, one me and another one, Leszek, with weapons and ammunition to go to him and to shoot him, which we did. As it happens, I didn't shoot him. I stopped at the staircase and I minded the staircase that nobody comes. The other guy went inside and minded the family that nobody picks the telephone or something. And the third one shot him.
In his flat?
Hmm.
This was in Warsaw, was it?
Hmm. I got here somebody whose father was shot. Somebody I know, who was very small at the time, a child, but the father was in the Polish police and obviously was working for Germans, and a troop went to his flat, shot him in front of his wife.
In the rising, were you wounded?
Nothing happened to me.
Well, when the rising first started, what were your expectations?
The expectation was that we will free Warsaw within 4 days. Actually, the day that the expectation that the rising started, my expectation were no longer the same as they were 3 days earlier. 3 days earlier, on the 28th, I think, so 4 days earlier, I thought the Germans were beaten, bands of them were moving west through Warsaw, fleeing in a total disorder. And it looked that, give or take, you know, a push, they will collapse. And it was the first day that it was cold for a rising. And we are already on our position of beginning until 10 o'clock at night. At 10 o'clock at night, somebody came in and told us that it was a false alarm, that we are to disperse. Now, to disperse, there was a police hour. Nothing could move after 8 o'clock in the night. And they tell you to disperse 30 men from this place at 10 at night. But we dispersed. I walked through gardens until I found a field of potatoes and moved myself in between the two potato things and spent the night lying there. In the morning, clean up and walk to the office, as if nothing happened. But if the rising was done then, I think it would have been far more successful. Maybe we would have got both bridges, because the bridges were the most important, stopped Germans communicating between what they were here and there. But altogether, if you ask me, each of us had a nom de guerre, right? A name by which he was known. I didn't know the names of the people that served for me. I didn't know their surnames, or I didn't know, except few, where they lived. They didn't know me from Adam. I had a name called Thomas. This was my pseudonym. I chose it when I joined the organization. You asked me why. Why Thomas? Because I never believed it. I never believed that we successfully can accomplish to what we are setting out to do. But it was my family crest and my family upbringing that made me do it. It's something which goes 500 years back and many generations. And if I didn't do it, then I couldn't live with myself.
What is the family crest?
The family crest is what I put on there. It's nobility. You see, Poland is a very peculiar country. We are many countries in one country. Now, in England, you don't feel it so much. But in Poland always needed soldiers, because it had Russians and Tatars and Turks and the Germans and God knows what. And the king always needed the service. And therefore, there were many noblemen in Poland, because you got your nobility on the field of action. And if your family was knighted in 15th century, then you tried to live to this
tradition.
Tradition, yes. And the percentage of the population of noble descent in Poland is very high compared with other countries. It's over 10%. Now, considering that we had 30% of Jews in the country, that we had Germans and Ukrainians out of the Polish mass, it's a lot percentage.
When you were captured by the Germans, what happened then?
When we were captured, we were walked to Okęcie, which is what is now the airport for Warsaw. We were given soup. Nobody had anything to eat the soup with. I had one fellow in my unit who went to the uprising with his mother giving him a box this size, metal box, with threads, with needles, with all that he may need. He never used it, so we dumped it all there, but we used the box to eat the soup. And then we were put on trains. Well, we walked to Pruszków. Pruszków, we were put on trains, sent to a transit camp in Skierniewice. There I got myself a spoon. I had some cigarettes, and I traded cigarettes for a spoon with a Russian soldier. And he was right that this is the most important thing you can ever have when you are a POW. It's a spoon. And that spoon lived with me all through Germany. And then afterwards, 3 days we stayed there. They put us on a train and we went to camp. I went to a camp which was called Stalag 10B, which were all the officers, all the NCOs, and all the other ranks from Warsaw were in that camp. There were also 3,000 or 4,000 Ruskis, and there were afterwards the Italian officers, which were brought in after Mussolini turncoat. And then I stayed in the camp, and in the camp I worked as a shoemaker.
Where is this camp?
It's halfway between Bremen and Hamburg.
How did you come to be liberated?
English Army, 8th Army came, playing some
band.
Must have been a Scottish regiment, because they were playing the
bagpipes?
Yes. And I watched them, and I didn't understand it, because they walked this slow march. This is the most difficult thing to do, slow march. Have you ever done that?
No.
You've never been to the army?
No.
No.
And then what?
Oh, then I heard that there is Polish army in Italy. So, within a couple of days, I was on my way to Italy and joined the 3rd Polish Lancers in Italy.
Any question of your going back to Poland?
Never. There was no question. To what? To finish in Coima? And a lot of... It's so funny you're asking. When I think of people who were in the prisoner of war camp, anyone who was from Western Poland thought that they will go back to Poland. I said, listen, you don't know what's going to happen to you. You've got 10 years on you already for being a Pole and being in a Warsaw uprising. Whatever happens, you're going to 10 years in Russia? No. Not one single person who was from Eastern Poland, who had anything to do with Russians, came back. Those that came back never been there before. And sure enough, all of them went to prison. Some of them for longer, some of them for less. My wife's husband, father, he was in Warsaw during the rising, went to prisoner of war camp in Germany. He was in Oflag, somewhere close to Lübeck. And after a period of time, he went back. He went back because he said that he feels that Poland needs us there. because he was educated, intelligent, and Poland lost a lot of educated people that he ought to be there. So he went. He went, and within 6 months, he was in prison, got 10 years. Fortunately for him, he was let out after 2 years.
So only Poles from Western Poland went back?
Well, there may have been one or two from Eastern Poland that went, but very much doubt.
Why? You said it was difficult for you in England at first. Why was it so difficult in England?
Well, it was, first of all, I spoke not one word of English. Secondly, at that time, you didn't particularly like foreigners. You still don't like them, but you tolerate them. To be called Gazarovsky, Gonsarovsky, was impossible to go anywhere and introduce yourself. Then, very quickly, we came here to be demobbed. The moment you got demobbed, it was the end. No money. What are you going to do? At that time, to get the unemployment benefit, you had to register and you had to accept a job that was given at the labor exchange. Now, what sort of jobs were they giving you? Mine. Mine here or mine there, wherever you might lie. I wangled a sort of a £20 a month as a student grant. And I went to London School of Economics. Now, on £20 a month, I got married and we had a baby. And I am used to, or I was used to, living on a certain standard. I found myself a little flat in Hampstead. One room, very nice, it was a library. Tiny kitchenette and a bath. And a telephone. It cost exactly £20 a month. This is exactly what I was earning. Right? So, in the morning I went on the bus or by tube to Regent Poly, because that's where the courses were. Then they moved us somewhere else to the City Literary Institute. That was tuppence or fourpence fare. So I had to smuggle myself without paying. Which, all right, I was quite good at it. But what can you do? Well, you need to eat. Now, I attended the lectures in English, which I don't understand. But I phonetically write what is being said. And then when I'm home, I have a large
dictionary,
and I try to fit the words to what they say.
What is the cause?
What?
What was the cause? What was the cause?
It was shipping and documentation. Now, I was quite good at it, because within 6 months, I produced an essay of the value of the shipping to the British Empire, and I got top marks for it. I also took accountancy, and Saturday and Sunday, 24 hours a day, I was painting and decorating all over Hampstead. There is hardly a house in Hampstead that I don't know inside and outside. I was working at 1 shilling and 3 pence an hour. That was in the old money. When I would think a minimum wage at that time was about 2 bob. But I had to take what I was given. And if I was cold, what would you take for the ceiling? Then I was thinking, the ceiling takes me so many hours, so I need at least that much. And I walk here and walk back. I must say that not long ago I visited one of the houses at corner of Finchley Road and West End Lane. And I was inside. And the painting on the staircase is still the one that I did. And it looks perfect. I must say that the woman who got me to do it went to Harrods and bought the painting Harrods, specially made for her, with a colour specially made for her. It was fantastic paint, but it must have been a very good painting also for 50 years to hold.
Did you attempt to tell English people what had happened to you in Poland?
Did I tell English
people? Did you try to tell English people what had happened to you in Poland?
No. No. It's something which at that time would not be understood. Because we were a very troublesome aliens, not aliens, what you call it, allies. Very troublesome. Because at that time, England was all enamored with Soviet Union. In fact, England was enamored with Soviet Union from the very beginning. From the 20s, 30s, same. People like this Bernard Shaw idiot and all the others, Mrs. Webb and all that, crypto-communist or communist.
So how did English people treat you?
Oh, people are fair enough. Human person to human person, perfect. But to tell them about your problems, best thing not to tell.
Did you eventually take British nationality?
I took it as quickly as I could. At that time you had to be 5 years, you had to advertise in the press, you had to have 2 referees. By that time I already worked for 2 years or 3 years at Wagon Lee Cook, Thomas Cook and Son. I made very good progress there. That also stuck to some people like a bone, because you came in and you joined at grade 4. And some people were grade 4 after 5 years. Some people were grade 3 after 4 years. I was grade 2 already after 3 years. So I obviously was good. And so some people didn't like it, but anyway, then turned up that somebody told me that there is a job going because people came from Burma and India with money, and they want to invest here, and they bought several businesses, but they need management. They're looking for a travel agent manager. So I said, I am travel agent, coming from Thomas Cook and Son. There's hardly anything that I don't know. Met in a pub. What's your name? I said, Gonsharovsky. Oh, no, you can't have that. People are not going to pick telephone and ask for Mr. Gonsharovsky. They'll ask for Brown or for Smith. You must get yourself a different name.